Hey, good day, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. I'm getting better at remembering when it's a roundtable, because we're not really doing the OIG files anymore. But whenever I have my retired OIG compadres with me, it always makes me remember. I'm joined today by, as always, or most of the time, Matt Kachansky, back from much deserved vacation. Matt, retired senior leader from HHS OIG, the retired Northeast UPIC director, and one of our management staff over here on our Special Investigations Unit team. And then also Wade McFowl. I'm back to calling him Wade McFowl because I really just couldn't get McFowl out of my mouth as a New Yorker. It's McFowl. Wade, retired assistant special agent in charge from our Los Angeles field office of the OIG, and is now one of the members of our SIU leadership team, and works to head up one of our contracts on one of our Medicaid sides. So Jason Eisengrind, who's normally with us, is on a PTO day, so it's just the three of us today. I am still Eric Rubenstein, Senior Director of Litigation, Fraud, Waste, and Abuse, and a retired Senior Special Agent from HHS OIG. I'm still Eric Rubenstein because I looked at my LinkedIn profile and that's what it said. And then I double checked with my driver's license. So I'm still Eric Rubenstein until someone tells me otherwise. We've got a packed set of things to talk about. You know, here at Advise, we've got about 20 or so plans. I think we're up to a little bit more that we are the outsourced SIU for. We have a large concentration of those plans in a variety of metropolitan areas, but we've got a fair number in one particular geographical area, which leads to a whole conversation regarding information sharing. Now, we've talked about this a number of times on our podcasts. I've blogged about it. Matt, Wade, we've talked about it a lot. We talk about the MCC, Major Case Coordination, which is a CMS-sponsored case discussion development thing. And we've been doing something like that similarly here. At Advise, we have a working group with a number of our plans for the purposes of a combination of things, information sharing and best practice development, where, you know, we've done a bunch of SIU process and procedural implementations. We've done a lot of how do we make an SIU better kind of thing in layman's terms. But, you know, the big thing in information sharing that's come about, and you hear this a lot, is this concern about at what point do you draw the line on what you're going to share. There are a couple of organizations out there, membership-driven organizations, that they run information sharing sessions for commercial payers, state payers. Wade, I want to start with you because, you know, at the OIG, you know, we were there to receive information, not give information. And now, you know, in the position that you're in, you're dealing with making referrals to state law enforcement, Medicaid Fraud Control Units, Office of Insurance Fraud Prosecutors. Information sharing is an important piece of the puzzle for a lot of reasons. But, you know, even when you were an ASAC at the OIG, you know, you'd be involved in some of these information sharing meetings. There's pluses and there's minuses. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about not only the pluses and the minuses, but sort of the, you know, how do you get around the issue of information leak? Meaning Wade McFowl is working on something and, you know, how much information do you want to share with another interested MCO and, you know, not be concerned that they're going to tip the hand of what Wade McFowl is working on?
Yeah. Well, just to backtrack a little bit, like you mentioned the MCC, and even prior to MCC, we used to have like quarterly meetings at the U.S. Attorney's Office, and it would be like all the players in the primarily Medicare, but it was even wider in the healthcare field in general. So you had commercial payers, you know, different insurance companies that we didn't necessarily work with that much because, you know, we are strictly Medicare and Medicaid, whereas the FBI would work commercial cases. So there were commercial payers like SIU people there, and we would always, you know, it was really like two meetings. It was like kind of a 30,000 foot, you know, we're talking about things more in generalities. And then at some point we would excuse everybody who's not law enforcement. It's like, okay, you have to go. And it was, they didn't like that. I mean, it was, they didn't want to miss out on the juicy stuff, but it was really two meetings. It was everybody and then law enforcement only. So, and there's obvious reasons for why that has to happen. And now, like you said, I see it from the other side. being with an SIU and not necessarily an MCC type meetings, but just when we make referrals to the Mafuku, you know, we have to go by this minimum necessary. Like I typically, if I got a referral from like the carriers or the Z pick or the U pick or somebody, and they send a referral, we would pretty much want like, tell them, give us everything you got, and we'll figure out what's relevant and what's not, but give me everything. So I'm not missing out on some evidence that you think isn't important that I do. But in the MCO world, this minimum necessary, I had a couple referrals early on, and I basically dumped everything into a shared drive so that the Medicaid agent working the case could have everything. And I was I learned quickly that that's not the way we do it. It's minimum necessary. So it's like, you know, the claims data, a few interviews, but not the kitchen sink, which is what I wanted as an agent or an ASAC. I wanted everything, and I can decide what's important and what's not. That's not really the way it works in the MCO world.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think that's a challenge. You know, one of the things that you talked about is this sort of bifurcated meeting, right? You know, when we did this in New Jersey, when I was at the OIG and I was in New Jersey, where I spent most of my time, the healthcare fraud unit chief really worked hard to bring everybody together. So he would coordinate with, you know, NCIB, for example, and have, you know, on a quarterly basis, we would have these meetings, and they would, you know, we would do some presentations, and then there would be an open forum for plan SIU people to stand up and talk about, share information about a case. And they didn't necessarily have to talk about the provider that they were investigating. A lot of times it could just be in generalities, like, what are you seeing? And what we would notice is that you would open up the floor and you'd have the functional equivalent of crickets, right? Because nobody wanted to share information. And so we would do the same thing. There would be a dismissal. People would go out. They would have their NICB sponsored lunch. And then the law enforcement people would stay together and talk. And that created a little bit of an animosity, right? Because like, you want information from us, but it's kind of a one-way street. It really is a challenge that there is a fear of information spill. And I think we talked a few weeks ago about, you know, if Wade McFowell is working on a case that has $1 million overpayment, does he really want to share that information with another plan's SIU? Because if that other plan has $1 million also, does the provider have $2 million sitting in a coffee can under the bed, right? Like likely not. And so it's a little bit like, you know, a little bit of a race to the finish line, right? So Matt, I want to go to you because that's a little bit of the issue. That's the rub. Yeah. And at the MCCs, and you know, you were a person that was at the forefront as the director of a UPIC. You're in the hot seat at these MCCs a lot, but you were also a local guy in the Baltimore area, so could go to a lot of these MCCs where that issue didn't really permeate out, mostly because all of the parties at the MCC were all CMS contractors, OIG people. They were all people where there was kind of a unified piece of the puzzle, hence UPICs, Unified Program Integrity Contractors. There really wasn't a lot of this push-pull, right?
Well, there was push and pull, and you got to go back prior to the MCCs and the evolution of the relationship between CMS, the Department of Justice, and law enforcement. You know, for many years, when I first started with the UPICs, we would meet with law enforcement, but we weren't allowed to tell them about our cases. We would just stick it to the generalities of, here's what we're doing with our data projects. Would you be interested in referrals? Because the push and pull was, we'd present a case to you guys in a meeting or talk about a provider prematurely, and all of a sudden you guys open a case, put a do not pursue or on it, and we would lose the ability to take any type of administrative actions while you guys pursue the criminal action. So there was this rift between CMS and OIG about who's, you know, who gets to the base first, and this is our case, this is your case, and never the twain shall meet. The MCC resolved that to a great degree because there was an agreement up front that yeah, we'll present the cases, you guys will accept them, but then the OIG or DOJ, or if they brought in the FBI on occasion, you guys are then accountable for, hey, what are you doing on that case? And when can we take administrative actions, you know, at the point where it wouldn't compromise what you guys are doing? So it really resolved a lot of those issues. But there was still that push and pull where every quarter there was a meeting with OIG and CMS. The UPICs were there, but we were largely silent, where they would go over every case that had been accepted and say, hey, look, we're still waiting for a payment suspension here. Can we take it? And the OIG had to give answers to that every quarter. So it was really an accountability issue that was resolved through this MCC process.
Yeah, you know, and I remember that when the MCCs really started to take their shape, you know, I remember you would be at my office in Edison more than some of the agents that worked in the office in Edison, because that relationship really did have a change. Now, some of that change in the relationship between the OIG and CMS, particularly CPI, Center for Program Integrity, was the result in leadership changes, right? So the yes, people, the absolutely, people that were running CPI and the OIG leadership, you know, at the Office of Investigations, there was a shift, and that shift created a relationship that was more symbiotic versus more, you know, than it was previously, which was, you know, acrimonious. So, you know, but it's an important piece that information sharing winds up becoming less of an issue when everybody's kind of on the same page. But, you know, the problem that I think will continue to exist for as long as it's going to exist is going to be that when you've got in the commercial space where there really isn't this unified goal, right? Everybody's within kind of their four walls. They mm-hmm. want to just kind of do what they want to do. But I think one of the things that we've been doing on our end to help kind of bridge that gap outside of that working group is the fact that we have, as part of our data analytics platform, we're ingesting data for all of our plans. And one of the good things about the ability in doing that is because we have so many plans that are in the same or closely aligned geographic area, if you are working on a case that involves Dr. Smith under this plan, Dr. Smith is also located in the same geographical area and is likely billing plans B, C, D, and E. Yep. You can go in, data mine, and essentially open up a case for each one of those plans on the same doc, because those plans are pretty much going to be the same. And so there's an inherent information sharing that we're doing, but it's kept at a level where plan A knows that we have a case open on Dr. Smith, plan B knows we have a case open on Dr. Smith, but plans A and B don't necessarily know that Dr. Smith is the Venn diagram of it, right? So we're indirectly creating that information sharing model without actually having to broach any of our corporate agreements with our plans and the like. But, you know, for Wade, for you, the challenge is that, you know, well, number one, you're at a very, you're working inside of a very large payer. You know, the Medicaid plan that you're attached to is the largest payer in the state in which you're doing the work. So you get the lion's share of the claims, but you know, it still doesn't absolve that frustration of, you know, if they're billing your plan, the provider is probably billing the other plans that are out there. And I think that I don't know if there's ever going to be an ability to resolve this, because plans have a financial need to have a return on investment, to recover overpayment dollars through fraud, waste, abuse, and payment integrity. And so I think that there's always going to be this inherent fear on the payer side. And I've never spoken to payers directly to get this answer, but I think that the challenge of sharing information, I think that the payers are probably, they're going to say they're less concerned about recovering all of those dollars, but they're more concerned about not being able to control the information narrative for their investigation, that by sharing too much, and I've had some payers come back and tell us instances where they did an information sharing and the other plans, you know, disclosed, oh, you're not only being investigated by us, but you're also being investigated by these other plans. And then, you know, as you know, from our last lives, when an investigation is overt things happen. You know, documents go missing, people's stories change. And so I don't know if there's ever a way to resolve it. I think that what we're doing in-house here is probably the closest thing to being able to rectify that by having that control as an SIU and seeing the things. And our plans trust us to know that we're going to be doing that, because it's really, they're doing it because, you know, we're doing, trying to do the right thing for them. I think some of the other organizations that are out there that do these information sharings, it's all de-identified. There's no SIU. It's kind of, you know, will you allow us to share this information? Will you not allow us? So it kind of goes a lot of the way, but I think it kind of falls short just because of the inherent push-pull that exists. Right, Matt?
One of the things that is interesting and kind of disheartening is, let's say, you know, we have an investigation on Dr. Smith and we finish the investigation, the administrative action's been taken, they've been suspended or terminated from plan A. That information doesn't get shared with any of the other plans, even if they know that Dr. Smith is a you know, participant in those other plans. So they continue to do whatever they do in those other plans, despite the fact that they've got a program integrity history now.
Yeah, that's frustrating. So wait, I'll go to you, because, you know, obviously that's an information sharing piece that I'm probably guessing when I say this, but, you know, if there is administrative action taken by a plan, you know, is there a contractual obligation for that provider to report that to other plans? I don't know the answer to that. It could be a maybe. I'm sure if there's disciplinary action from a licensing perspective, right, that's going to be in the plan. But wait, I'm sure if you learned that a provider got terminated from a plan for some malfeasance, fraud, waste, abuse, compliance issue, whatever it may be, you would immediately jump on that, right? I mean, you would immediately, if you didn't have an open case, you'd certainly be looking to open a case. And if you did have an open case, your focus may entirely shift because of that. And you'd certainly want to know what the story is, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I don't think there is any kind of mechanism in place that, you know, that happens automatically. You know, it's not like it's quite a few levels below, you know, when somebody gets like excluded or something like that. And then there's the database that they still have to go in and do searches, but the list of excluded individuals and that type of thing. But this is not to that, you know, to that degree where it's available for people. So I don't think there's anything in place that, you know, automatically notifies, but you're right. If you did find out about that through whatever method, you would certainly want to jump on that and open a case, or at least look into it to see if you have the same issues with your plan, for sure.
Yeah, and you would expect in some sort of information sharing if they're out of our plan, and here's why they're out of our plan. So they're no longer a problem for us, but they may still be a problem for you. So yeah, I think this is one of those topics where we could talk about all of the pros and cons of doing it. I don't know if there's a way to ever come up with a solution, because every plan's got its own fiduciary interests that they have to deal with and contemplate. So, you know, I think we're going to wind up continuing to talk about this. You know, we're it's amazing. We had two or three things that we were going to talk about, but we've run out of time as always. We never seem to have enough time to talk about the things that we need to talk about. So again, as always, I appreciate you guys being on. I appreciate your insight into things. Again, for those of you that get our newsletter, we appreciate your support and your loyalty to our newsletter and our podcasts. Again, if you're not getting our newsletter and you've tuned into this podcast and you'd like to get our newsletter, feel free to reach out to us at advisehello@adviseadvizehealth.com. We've got a great LinkedIn Live coming up on June 14th. I'm going to be speaking with Gary Ciccio. For those of you that get our newsletter or have seen our podcast, Gary was on a few weeks ago, subject matter expert in podiatry, 40 years in the field, probably 30 years in the fraud, waste, and abuse field. We've got some good topics to talk about. We're going to talk about anesthesiology in the podiatry space and some of the new fraud schemes going on there. It's going to be a great conversation. That'll be on June 14th. You can get that as a LinkedIn Live. Just sign up to attend and you'll get the link for that. We've got a lot of other great podcasts coming out. If you're not getting our podcasts in the newsletter, but you've tuned in, you can always go up onto our YouTube channel or Spotify. You can find all of our historical broadcasts there. So again, thanks for tuning in. Matt, Wade, thanks for being part of it. And I'll see you all on the next one.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you all.